Hello, everybody. My name's Greg Reichs. I'm going to talk to you today. I'm a research associate at South Dakota State University in the Department of Agronomy, Horticulture, and Plant Science. And today I'm going to talk to you about growing the South Dakota Soybean On-Farm Research Program. So the South Dakota Soybean On-Farm Research Program is funded by the South Dakota Soybean Research and Promotion Council, and it provides farmers the opportunity to test management practices of their choice on their farm, and often with their own equipment. SDSU personnel assist with the experimental design, data analysis. We provide reports of the trials to the farmers. We also maintain a website for showcasing the findings for general viewing. And one other thing we do a lot of times, we'll try to help them find if there's a product they want to test, but you know, it might be kind of expensive or whatever. We'll try to line up some for them at no cost. So a typical on-farm trial here, you can see that, see here, we got the pointer on there or not so much. Oh, there it goes. All right, great. So Okay. So in this trial here, this is a foliar fungicide trial where the farmer sprayed a fungicide on his soybeans, you know, so they don't get diseases. So what he did here, we always tell him to do at least three replications. That's, you know, sound science. So the trial here, he had his three pink strips right there in the field. They're each of them 18 meters wide. And so he'd do 18 meters and skip 18, another 18, he'd spray, then skip and spray, and so forth. So in this diagram, I kind of blew up a little section here of one of the areas that he sprayed. So here's that strip right here. I'm right in it there. So that 18 meter wide strip. So for our data analysis, you know, we like to really look at these other lines here, this like green and blue and so forth, those are his harvesting. When he harvested his grain, those are the passes that he made. So those are, they aren't 18, they're only 9 meters wide in this case. So we really like to look at, We really like to look at the middle pass out of each one of those strips. So, in each one of those strips, there's 400 to 500 data points from harvesting. I am not having luck with this. Okay, so anyway, what's wrong with this field? It really doesn't look like a field in the real world. It's flat as a pancake here. So this is more reality. So one of our biggest problems we face is there's just so much variability within one of those treated strips. So at the top of the hill, the summit there, it's often too dry. And therefore we have, you can see the soybeans there are shorter. We can still see through soil through the canopy there. On the back slope, usually we have close to ideal water amounts. And then the foot slope, we have, it can be too wet, but not always, depending on the drainage conditions of the field. If it has good drain tile in the beneath the ground, then we often have some of the highest yielding places on that foot slope. So this field wasn't so fortunate. So one method we have to approach this within strip variability, we quit treating these large on-farm strips like they're small plots on a research farm. So we've been breaking down our fields into yield zones. So within those yield zones, we have a low, which is less than 35 bushels per acre or 2.2 megagrams per hectare. A medium, it's going to be 2.2 to 3.5. And then our high is going to be over 3.5 megagrams per hectare or 55 bushels per acre, whichever you prefer. So that was just kind of a starting point. There's nothing perfect about those, but you'll see later on in my talk that, you know, we definitely saw some differences there and we broke things out by those zones. So in over 100 trials, the thing is, since 2014 when we've been doing this, we've seen less than 10 where when we treat that field like it's a small plot research farm, just comparing one strip to another, you know, we've seen less than 10 trials where we had a statistically significant yield response across that entire field. However, when we break things down by yield zone, that low, medium, high, we much more frequently see statistically significant differences. So our next problem, I talked about variability within a strip. As we go across the field, we have this rolling landscape. Our next one is variability amongst strips. So in this particular example, we have the treated strip there. Let's say we sprayed a fungicide or something, and you can see our 3.7 megagram per hectare grain yield. Well, if I look at that strip upslope, it looks like, you know, we got a yield increase due to our treatment. Or if we look downslope, just because there's probably more soil water there, it looks like maybe we had a yield reduction with our treatment. So one way to handle this, making sure we make good comparisons, is that we average these two strips out here. So we look at, 3.45 upslope, 4.08 downslope, averages out to 3.77 estimated yield for that red strip. That would be assuming we didn't place that treatment. So we take the actual yield of that strip, 3.77, and then minus the estimated yield of that strip without the treatment, and that helps correct that. So you get a zero yield difference on that, for example. So when we get the data in from the farmers, from their harvesting equipment, their combines, it's in this point format like we showed you earlier. Each one of them lines going up and down the field there on the left has about 400 to 500 data points in there. So we convert those points. I'm not going to get too deep into GIS stuff here, but we convert those from point data to raster data. So we smooth them out more so, and they're, we color code them. In this case, we have the greens and blues are going to be higher yielding, and the yellows and oranges, reds are going to be lower. And we overlay that on a 3D topography map, so that really helps tell more of the story when you can see that topographical differences. The next step, there on the left side there, we have our seven strips that we're working with, four untreated and three treated ones. We remove the treated strips, so we're just left with the four untreated. So what we're going to do then with those four untreated strips on the left, we're going to estimate that yield difference in those void areas. Those three treated strips we removed, we're going to estimate. There's my pointer. So we're going to estimate there was a treated strip. There's another one we removed, and there's another one. So we got to estimate what that would have been, those strips, if we wouldn't have sprayed that product. So there's our, on the right side, there is our estimated yield of those three treated strips if the treatment would have never been placed. So in the final step, we bring back that treated data that we removed. Then we subtract the estimated yield of those same strips in the middle without the treatment. And then we end up with our final product, the yield difference map. So these yield difference maps is really the key point of any report. And this is the website that those reports go to. It just launched late this summer. So when you go to the website, you click on the trial results or the view trials. They'll both take you to the same place. And when you get in there, at the top, all the trials that have been done, we separated into 8 or 9 different categories. So say I'm interested in looking at this rate of seeding that I used in the field. So I click on that one, and then our seeding rate trials come up. I should go back one. So there's all the counties in blue in South Dakota where a seeding rate trial has been done. So if I'm going to click on my home county here, Brookings, for example, turns yellow, and then up pop the three different trials that have been performed. Those are the reports for the three trials. And each one of them has one of those yield difference maps, like I just showed you a few slides ago, has the actual yield map of the field. That's the yields encompassing the whole study area. We have table data of the four strips and soils of the field. And there's much, much more. There's only so much a guy can get on one slide. So the second part of my talk here, I'm going to talk about over the past 4 years since we've been doing this, I'm going to talk about some cases for precision management we've seen in soybeans. I mean, these aren't all of them. It's just a few. It's just a 20-minute talk here, so I'm just going to touch on a few highlights. So we're going to start out with seeding rates and variable seeding rates. It's kind of believed that higher seeding rates on upland soils in a field can increase yields by growing taller plants in areas that otherwise might be shorter plants due to moisture stress, or limited moisture, I should say. And taller plants are often have more pods, so maybe possibly more yield. And will adding more plants use too much water is the question. And this was something a farmer came to me wanting to know. So we decided to put it to the test. This was way, way up north in Brown County, almost practically in North Dakota. And we had two different seeding rates, 395,000 seeds per hectare and 494,000. So that's 160,000 and 200,000 seeds per acre, for those who prefer those terms. So we looked at that, in came the yield data, and here's the difference between the two, the overall strip average of those four strips he placed, and 0.07 megagram per hectare is what we got, but that was not statistically significant. So it looks like when you just look at it that way, simple way of looking at it, the results suggest, hey, there's no effect on yield, just wasted money on seed. But when you peel away a layer and just dig into this a little deeper, break that down into the three yield zones we talked about earlier, every one of these, here's our yield differences right here in this column, every one of these was statistically significant. So we had some pretty substantial loss when we increased our seeding rate in this field in that low yield zone. That was like 16 bushels per acre for right there, -1.05 megagrams per hectare. And we had a little, not quite as bad a loss in the medium yield zone. The high yield zone, we actually got a significant yield gain of about 8 bushels per acre. So that's just some crazy stuff there. And here's a map of the field. Here's his actual yield map. You can see most of the actions going on in this part of the field. I have kind of a big triangle on the other side. So here's this yield difference map. The blues and the greens, those are some of your higher responses to that higher seeding rate, higher yield responses. And lo and behold, kind of right across this little bump here, little ridge, this is also the highest yielding place in his field. So increasing his seeding rate in that area probably worked for him. And then the place where he lost all kinds of yield was, this red and orange area. This was also his lowest yielding spot in the field, kind of going down this roller coaster ride of a hill into this lowland here. The next case we've seen for precision management I'm going to talk about is nitrogen fertilizer in soybeans. Nitrogen fertilizer not commonly applied to soybeans. Soybeans, they're a legume. They work with Bradyrhizobium japonicum and bacteria in the soil. The soybean plant feeds the bacteria. The bacteria makes nitrogen for the soybeans. All is usually good, and you usually don't need the extra nitrogen. But so a bunch of people wanted to try this the first year we did our program in 2014. So the thing is, if nitrogen is abundant in soil, soybeans are kind of like people. If they think they have it all, they can sense it. They know there's that nitrogen there, and they don't think they have to work hard to feed that bacteria in the soil. So Consequently, if we put a big load of nitrogen out there, fertilizer, the soybeans are going to know it, and they're going to say, okay, I don't have to make my own anymore. So, but one alternative, ESN, it's a slow-release granular fertilizer from Agrium. We decided to put that to the test. This is just every time it rains, a little bit's released from the granule instead of all at once. So with the idea that is, keeping those soybeans humble and hungry. So the on-farm cooperators applied 84 pounds of N per hectare in June through mid-July, kind of whenever they found the time, the middle of the growing season. So here's just, this is the first year, so our maps they're kind of crude. We got to revisit some of these, but you can definitely see this is one of those fields I talked about earlier where we had a significant response all the way across the field. We didn't have to break it down into the yield zones. And we got a difference of 0.28 megagrams per hectare, which is about 4.5 bushels per acre. So when we revisit this field here and recalculate those by yield zones, it'll be interesting to see. We could maybe see some bigger differences in that. Another nitrogen form we talked about was a foliar. Instead of going on the soil, which I just talked about with the ESN, this foliar stuff was put on the leaves. at a much lower rate. Instead of 84 kilograms of N per hectare, that one only went on at about 6.7, but it was just put on the foliage. This was applied much later, not, you know, instead of June, July. This was done August 24th, 2015, which was maybe a month left of growing season. I really had my doubts when this was done. It was just when the farmer finally found time. I thought there wasn't enough time left to get any extra yield, but I was looked at the whole strip average here. When I first saw that data, I was like, well, I was probably right. It, you know, didn't have enough time there. It's put on too late. But then when you break that down into the yield zones, the medium yield zone, this actually lost some yield. And that kind of agrees with the talk from Ohio State today, if any of you guys are in the audience from that one. But at the higher yield zone, the greater than 3.5 megagram per hectare, we actually got 0.5 megagram per hectare increase there. So that was about 8 bushel increase. I mean, this wasn't the norm. We've done this 3 other times, but it just this shows the potential here when we break things down by yield zone. So here's the map of that field. You can definitely see the yield difference map here. The greens and the blues are kind of in this area and a little bit through here, and lo and behold, that's his highest yielding part of his field too, through there. So the final thing I'm going to talk about is going to be foliar fungicides. Now, foliar fungicides have really increased in our state and many others here in the last 3-4 years. So one of the bad things though is that, especially in the southern U.S., we've created resistant diseases because we've been overusing them, and there's even some evidence that they can provide plant health benefits besides curing diseases. So here's one we did in 2015, way out in Brule County, which is about the western edge of where soybeans are usually growing in the state of South Dakota. This was applied August 12th. I was thinking it might have been a little late as well, but it's just when the farmer got to it. So kind of wanted an earlier, late July, early August on this one, but it was what it was. So, and when I got the yield data back, here's our whole strip averages. Difference of 0.01 megagram per hectare, not significant. Well, maybe we put it on too late. So, or maybe not. When we break that down by yield zone, I'm going to show you something here. Skip that slide by accident. I looked at the yield map of this field, and I saw these two strips with a lot of blue in them. I was like, well, that's kind of strange. You know, that looks like it worked there, and here's the same area of the field, and that's kind of it's an area of the field that's it's the highest yielding part of the field where the treatment was placed. Obviously, you got some higher yielding stuff down here, but there are no strips. So this gold is higher yielding than these browns. It's a bit of in a little bit of a depression compared to these areas. So you might expect, you know, taller, bushier beans, more conducive to disease down there. So when you look at that area through there, we tinkered with the yield zone a little bit. Instead of 55, we set it down to 45 bushels per acre, just to see what happened there. And that's 2.2 megagrams per hectare. And lo and behold, that was significant as well, about 4.5 bushel per acre yield difference there if we would have just sprayed through that area. That's 0.26 megagram per hectare. So shows maybe that's an approach we should be looking at for fungicide application in the future. So in summary, the South Dakota On-Farm Soybean Research Program, it's providing farmers with hands-on training to conduct their own research and interpret the data. We have launched a website recently to share these results and help farmers make decisions to help increase profits. And our goal is to increase the number of participants every year, which should advance on-farm research and the adoption of precision agriculture in the state. A special thank you to the South Dakota Soybean Research and Promotion Council for funding this, all of our on-farm cooperators for their efforts, and I'd like to thank Deepak over there against the wall. He helped me out pull this together this week with a lot of the examples of the maps for you guys. I was pretty busy in the field, so thank you as well. So that concludes my talk. I'll field any questions.
Just about 2 minutes.
Okay. Yes.
Are the farmers involved in that at all, or do you just do all that for them and send it back?
Okay, so the question was, in terms of the GIS analysis, are the farmers involved in that? We do that for them, so, yes. One of the perks of it. So.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Or something related to that is, do you have to explain to the farmers how to interpret your GIS graphs, or are they picking up very quickly how to read their data?
The farmers are really good at, the question was, with the GIS graphs, can they interpret it? They're really good at interpreting it. They know the soils, they know their high spots, their low spots, and whatever. And when they see responses, they're usually, yep, I knew that. They knew that would happen, they say. But the statistics is something they're learning, significant differences. And yeah, that's been a real eye opener to a lot of them. Okay, the question was if we're just breaking the yield zones, what'd you say, by just yield, or if you're using other factors like elevation?
Are you using those, like, in high yield moving, like, based on slope position? I was wondering if you guys use, like, soil types of yield and other factors to break up those yield zones, or just slope?
For now, it's just the yield zones, just putting, just breaking it. It's the simplest approach for now, but there's many more things that could be done, like elevation, for example, soil types. So, good question. Yes?
Are you studying the yield zones different for every field based on the data, or you have it set low, medium, high?
We have it set just to standardize it for all the trials, the low, medium, high. But the one I showed you with the fungicide, we just adjusted it a little bit for that, because it looked like something was going on there that, that low, medium, high wasn't quite catching. And sure enough, it was. So, but for the most part, that works, the one we have now. So, thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
And our last speaker, Tom.